Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. The story never ends here in Cleveland, and we love getting a little national perspective on it, especially from someone in the know. He is James Palmer, The Athletic, the podcast Scoop City with Diane Rossini and Chase Daniel. And right now, he is on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing okay, guys. I'm still a little upset. I don't know about you from New Year's Eve. Like, I'm still struggling.
Buckeyes?
It was really,
yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm a Buckeye.
Yes. I still am. So,
Buckeye grad.
I'm a Buckeye grad twice over. Spent the better half of a decade there. I'm still having a little bit of an issue, but I'm moving forward. These coaching searches have been a nice welcoming distraction from what happened last week.
James, what was your last year in Columbus? When did you graduate?
My final game as a student was I think we've used game of the century in college football like 70,000 times, but it was Troy Smith 1-2 Michigan at the Shoe. 06 was my last game as a student.
Gotcha. What memories? So many good memories. A lot of good memories, though. Let's be honest.
Years. Yeah, let's go.
Let's be honest. All right, listen, James. We have nothing but drama here in Cleveland. We would love to have a playoff game again. And so, you know, we would like to actually host a playoff game in the stadium they currently play in before they actually move to a dome, which has never happened. There's never been a playoff game at this. Just give me your view from 10,000 feet of the Cleveland Browns.
It's fascinating. And we can go through the whole cycle, but this whole cycle is fascinating. I think Cleveland's kind of at the crux of it. When you depart and part ways with your head coach, who now is the clear-cut number one candidate on the market, is a fascinating situation to be in. I mean, guys, like when I talk to candidates over the last several weeks, guys are always very interested in talking to people like me and other people like Diana around the league of going, hey, how many openings do you think there's going to be? Who's going to be available, right? They're always asking, is Harbaugh, is this it? Or is Mike Tomlin, is this finally going to be time? Every single guy I talked to was, hey, what do you think is going to happen with Kevin Stefanski? And why were they also interested about Kevin Stefanski? Because they're looking for a job. And they know if Kevin becomes available, that's one less job that they're going to most likely have an opportunity at because they all respect him as a coach so much. And so that's kind of the interesting landscape that Cleveland is in. Now, I will say this. I mentioned two other guys that have been in the league for, 18 to 19 years in Tomlin and Harbaugh. This had a similar feel to it, just different. Those guys obviously a ton of success in where they're at, but my point is it just kind of felt like it was time in Cleveland. Like I want to kind of say that as part of this. It just felt like this was a point with the rookie class that you had and where you were the last 2 years and kind of how it wore on everybody in the building, I think Kevin included. It was time to make a decision. It's just a very interesting year with the pool of candidates we can get into it and who's going to be available to make that decision. And now the guy that left your building is clearly, and most people I talk to around the league's minds, the number one candidate available right now.
James, did it surprise you that Kevin was let go and Andrew Berry wasn't?
To an extent. I agree with that. I think we go look at all the openings we have. Monty Osipor keeps his job right there in Arizona, right? And you see John Spytek, he did sign a brand new 5-year deal, so he keeps his job. But Atlanta's the only one where they parted ways with both after a 2-month, long research project done by a consulting firm. I know that owners don't like to go through these things alone very often. And that's why you oftentimes hear that the general manager is helping lead the search. I think that's a comfort level and somebody that they know and they trust and when they're looking for the new head coach plays a part in it as well. And this other part, and I've always heard this from head coaches around the league. Now, they all may be biased, guys, like because obviously this is all coming from the head coaching side of things. But when you're down there coaching every single Sunday and the general manager is up maybe in the owner's box next to the owner, head coaches definitely feel like they're at a far disadvantage compared to the general manager while both of them are sitting in their respective spots on Sunday. I'm not saying anything, ill will against Andrew Berry. I think very, very highly of him character-wise and as a person. So I'm not discrediting him by any sense. But there's always been that thought amongst head coaches where the GM is always in a better spot to have the owner's ear than, say, the head coach does. And so that part is just kind of just an opinion thing I wanted to get out there from head coaches. But the other part of it is owners don't like to usually go through this alone. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some shuffling maybe with Andrew or however things are lined up. I'm not saying it will happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe something did change a little bit in terms of the hierarchy.
Yeah, James, let's not forget that the Haslams went through a coaching search where they got rejected. and ended up with Mike Pettine when Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi were like apparently fighting on the airplane over stuff. And it was just like, what? How does this, you know? So I'm just wondering how the history for the Haslams is going to help them this time. Jimmy was kind of funny when he said it, but we agree he does understand what it's like to go through a coaching search now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
I don't know. I look at it and I'm just wondering where they're going to end up with this thing. And the other question then too becomes, where does Jim Schwartz fit into this picture? Because he did an amazing job with the defense, and maybe he's ready for round two.
Yeah, that's one of the linchpins of what happens. Now, when I mentioned this head coaching cycle, I think this is a very different year than in years past. I mean, I mentioned where Kevin stands now that he's available, and it's not like last year where we were all sitting here going, okay, Ben Johnson, if he wants a job, he's getting one, and Mike Vrabel is getting a job. We don't have that this year. You know, we don't have those guys that everybody, you know, Tom Brady was doing everything he could to lure Ben Johnson to the Raiders and ended up not doing it. Like, those type of candidates aren't really part of this pool. I think you need to be more creative. I think you need to work really hard to figure out some of these guys that are going to be available, that if maybe one of them is an up-and-coming individual, like, I'll just throw out Davis Webb. Like, I'll just, you know, he's the quarterback coach in Denver. A lot of people around the league are very curious about him. He's completely blocked here, but he's played a big role in the development of Bo Nix. He's a former quarterback himself. I think the Giants will have some interest in him. I'm just saying that is like a name where you might have to be creative in types of candidates like that and who you're looking for. The point of this is defensive guys are very appealing in this cycle because of the success of Mike McDonald up there in Seattle. I think that's why Jesse Minter is a very successful-looking candidate in a lot of people's eyes. I bring all of this together to say the young offensive-minded guys, if you have to reach for a guy like Davis Webb, that shows you that there's not a lot of them there. So there might be more defensive guys. So how does that play into the fact of Jim Schwartz staying? And so I think that part of it is a fascinating aspect because of the candidates. What is his future? I thought he did an outstanding job, as always, it seems like, with a really, really good defensive unit. I think keeping him would obviously be very smart. But because of the candidates that are at play in the landscape of this cycle, I think that makes it more complicated.
James Palmer joining us from The Athletic. Dan and I talked in the break, and we would love for the Browns to find a guy who could become their John Harbaugh, their Mike Tomlin. You mentioned Mike McDonald. We mentioned his name when we were just chatting. Their Sean McVay, you know, the coordinator, the guy maybe a little under the radar who becomes a big-time head coach. Two things. Do you think the Browns can pull that off? Is that what they would be looking for? And you mentioned Davis Webb. Anybody else who you think fits into that category?
I mean, I mentioned Jesse Minter real quickly. I spent some time with the Chargers just this past week, and man, that building just thinks the absolute world of him. I've talked to some coaches that have worked with him in the college ranks and the pro ranks, and they're like, he is ready. He is a star in the making. And I know Jim Harbaugh doesn't want to lose him in terms of the type of coach he is. But that type of candidate has the same ability that Mike McDonald does in terms of changing an entire building and changing everything that you could go out there and do. I know Chris Shule is a name that some people think. I'm kind of torn on Clint Kubiak, and these are kind of some of the more, you know, prominent names. There's just, you're going to have to be creative in a sense, I think, a little bit. And if you want to land somebody, and you mentioned just kind of how you have to sell the Browns, you have to really push that rookie class. You have to try to, you know, hide things like the salary cap situation that you got with Deshaun Watson and figure out how you're going to get somebody that is probably going to be very eager and most likely younger to withstand what they have to do early on and be that driving force of change. I don't know how many, you know, candidates are like that out there right now, and I don't know if the teams essentially do. And I think that's why you're seeing guys like Matt Nagy looking to maybe get his second opportunity. A lot of guys learn from that first opportunity what went wrong really, really well. I've had those conversations with Matt before in the past. So what route do you want to go? Do you want to go the route that you mentioned with those guys that maybe might be under the radar and you have something that you can really see as a future and as a long-term solution? Or do you think somebody is better off in their second go-around, like a Steve Spagnuolo or a Matt Nagy? The options are all over the place. There's just no slam dunks in teams' minds right now, which is why this hiring cycle, I think, is different than years past.
How comfortable can Andrew Berry be right now? I wonder if he feels like he's on the hot seat going into next season, going into this draft. Is he, like you said, to be there and help the owner out maybe a little bit just to make sure you get through a coaching search? Like, if you're Andrew Berry, how are you feeling today?
I think you're feeling probably very similar to Joe Shane. I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a really good draft class this year. You have some pieces that you've drafted well and put together, but you've also been a part of some very highly public poor decisions, whether it's Saquon Barkley or Deshaun Watson, right? They're very similar spots that both of these guys are in, and they're both helping ownership within their searches because I think they're kind of needed in terms of helping those searches. I think he knows with all the draft picks, whether they have 10, I think, with two in the first round in this upcoming draft, that you have to hit on it again. I'm standing here in Denver right now, guys, who they've been dealing with the Russell Wilson dead money for 2 years now, and find themselves as the number one seed in the AFC. How did they do that? I think, honestly, all the attention goes to Sean Payton. The person I think deserves much more attention is George Payton, their general manager, who drafted really, really well, consecutive seasons back and forth and back and forth in second-round picks like Nick Benito and guys outside of the first round because they didn't have first-round picks with the trade for Russell Wilson and then the trade for Sean Payton. And they hit on draft picks throughout the course of the draft. I think Andrew Berry needs to do that consecutively now down the road. Build off of this one. It was outstanding. And then find your quarterback is the other part that Denver was very, very good at. You get a quarterback on a rookie contract to handle some of the cap issues that they're having and that the Browns are going to have as well a little bit, and you find yourself out of it. I think the GM is equally as important, obviously, as the head coach, and we know Sean's done a great job with the Broncos, but at the same time, that roster was put together by having really good drafts in multiple years getting out of bad situations. I don't know if we have a large enough sample size from Andrew Berry to say that he's going to do that or he's maybe at the start of that, but I think this next year is absolutely massive.
James Palmer joining us, co-host of Scoop City for The Athletic. What's your gut tell you? Where is Kevin Stefanski next year? What's he doing? Is he coaching? And if so, where might it be?
You know, I think the most interesting part of this entire cycle happened yesterday, and that was Tom Brady's name actually being on the press release from the Raiders. You know, this is something that we've known in Vegas that, you know, he's a part of what's going on. Oh my God, he's wearing a headset early in the year and how active is he and all these different things. They told all of us that Tom is going to be a big part of what they're doing. And my understanding is Mark Davis is taking a little bit of a step back, and Tom and John Spytek, the old college buddies, are going to be running things. Do they want to go more New England? Do they want to go, you know, to a guy like Kevin Stefanski that can help them pick that quarterback? To me, if Kevin picks a spot, and I think he has his choice, if he decides to go to a place, my gut would tell me that he'd want to go to a place where the quarterback is already established. Now, the Atlanta job is essentially, how much do you like Michael Penix? I don't know how much he likes Michael Penix, but I do know Matt Ryan understands that system that Kevin runs really, really well. It's what made Matt kind of successful, and his new flashy title that's expected to come, guys, president of football. I've never heard of that before, but it's awesome. it's really a great title. Will they pursue, you know, him? And I don't know if Kevin likes Michael Penix. I just think the quarterback position, with everything that Kevin has been through, probably in Cleveland, plays a massive part in it. And I do think he still has the option to take a year. You know, I'm not saying he will. I think he's pretty energized, from my understanding, about a new opportunity right now, as we're a couple days removed from it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he looked at the landscape and said, maybe I take a year. Maybe he calls his good buddy Mike Vrabel and you know, kind of gets his take on what Mike did for a year. I think everything's, you know, a possibility for him, but I do think he has his pick, and I think the quarterback position plays a really big part in that.
Here's another thought I just had on the Browns. Like, if they wanted to go for Gruden or Flores, like, the Browns aren't scared of controversy. I mean, Deshaun Watson is the number one A example. I think the Browns will go after whoever they want, regardless of what the league thinks or if there's litigation or anything. Like, can you agree with me on that? Or can you see a pattern that the Browns are going to do what the Browns want to do?
No, I can put them in the same category as I mentioned with the Raiders. The Raiders have never cared what the rest of the league thinks and what the actual league thinks. Al never cared, and Mark's kind of lived that same way. That's why I think Brian Flores is actually a candidate down there in Vegas, and I think the Browns could have the same similar type of thinking if they want to go outside of the box. And this might be the year that you might have to do that when you look at the candidates that you're interviewing and you're looking through, going, you know what, maybe we do take a stab at John Gruden. It's one of those things to where, like, if it works, man, do you look smart, and if it looks bad, it's like, man, the Browns did it again. It's kind of like a really interesting situation when you go outside of the box if you're Cleveland.
You want to throw me a wild card for this race? Give me a wild card. Jason Garrett seems to be my wild card. I have no reason to do it other than the fact that he went to high school here. It's the only reason why.
Dad worked here forever.
Gannon's a local guy, right?
Isn't he? Yeah, that's true. Gannon's a local guy, too.
I'll say this. Gannon was a guy, and just I'm not saying he's getting the Browns job, but like he was a guy that we were around the league talking to a lot of people that I know thought was safe. I mean, I know nine-game losing streak's pretty brutal, but I think even if you ask Michael Bidwell, he'd tell you that Gannon's a really good coach. And I host a show with Steve Smith that we just got done taping this morning that we do ourselves, and Steve was telling me how much respect he has for Jonathan Gannon as a coach. I think he has a lot of respect around the league. He might get a DC job maybe as opposed to a head coaching gig. I think Cliff being available is very interesting with that happening just, you know, within the hour. That's been in the works for a while now. There's been a lot of butting at heads, my understanding, behind closed doors between, you know, everyone there. And you know, Cliff last year was a candidate in some people's minds, but at the same time, he was going to be very, very selective because he thought differently about his position in Washington, very differently than it did now. And he was very happy with where he was at and working with Jaden Daniels. I think he kind of changes this landscape just a little bit. He's going to get some looks. I wouldn't be surprised if New York looks at him for sure. And he's a guy, though, like if you're looking for the long-term, long haul, like the other guys in the division, Cliff hasn't really given you the thought that that's something that you can build off of. The beginning's usually great, and then something usually happens. But I do think he's a guy that everybody would be looking at as well. So, I mean, he kind of was picky-choosy last year. I'm curious if that's going to be the same case this year.
James, thank you. I have a ton of Ohio State questions for you, but maybe we'll save that for another time. How's that sound?
Whose fault do you think the pick six was on?
But didn't we see it coming? We saw it coming. If you watch any of the games, those first quarter kind of weird throws that he had, I was like, oh, I kind of felt this coming. I'm sorry, James. I hate to break it to us.
I know.
All right, we'll talk Buckeyes in the future, but otherwise we're checking out in The Athletic. And, of course, we're checking out your podcast, Scoop City, with Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel. Thank you, James.